Today's episode is made possible by Affinity Solutions. Unlock your business's potential with actionable insights into consumer spending, powered by Affinity Solutions. With exclusive insights from over 140 million cards, Affinity Solutions showcases consumer purchase behavior with unprecedented clarity. Seize the opportunity to reshape your strategy with accuracy, execute with precision, and measure with confidence. Affinity Solutions equips you to outperform in today's competitive landscape. Step into the future of analytics with Affinity Solutions today.
So there's a strong belief that we have at Affinity that marketers, retailers, they need to have visibility on what their customers are doing, what their prospective customers are doing outside their own stores and websites.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, December 19th. Susie, Jonathan, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Affinity Solutions. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks. Let's meet them. We start with our VP of content, head of everything retail based in New York. It's Susie David Canyon.
Hi, Marcus. Thanks for having me.
Why were you? Sorry. You seem surprised that you were going to be on
confused.
This.
I got confused. Too much happening. I was monitoring the voice
messing
going.
Messing around with your terrible Christmas tree lights. We're also joined by founder and CEO of Affinity Solutions. It's Jonathan Silver.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Marcus. Hey, Susie.
Hey,
hello,
Jonathan.
There, sir. That's a prepared response,
I'm
Susie.
I'm already now.
Get that
nervous.
Notepad out.
Yeah.
All right, folks, let's get to know our two guests a little bit better with, of course, a speed intro. So, well, a couple of questions for these two folks. Let's do it. Jonathan, where are you from and based?
I am originally from New Jersey. I live in Mamaroneck, New York, which is in Lower Westchester County.
Have you spoken to Victoria, who edits the show, have you spoken to her about New Jersey yet? She's the mayor of New Jersey.
Oh, is that right?
Officially.
Oh,
yeah, okay. She is its biggest fan. I can just see the smile on her face right now. There she is on camera. She's got some questions for you once we finish. Susie, I think the audience know at this point, don't they? But tell them.
So I'm actually going to give you a long-winded answer because it's complicated.
That's not what we talked about.
I'm Armenian and Polish with a Canadian passport. So that's where I'm from. And I am based in New York.
There it is. Susie, what do you do in a sentence?
I study and talk about retail.
And Jonathan?
I love data. I'm all about data. Data to improve people's lives. That's our ultimate vision of my life, using data to improve people's lives.
Very nice. The best kind, would say. Favorite movie ever, sir? Favorite movie?
Shawshank Redemption.
Bang. He had it loaded. See, Susie? He's on it. Susie?
Any Hallmark movie.
Massive delay.
Any Hallmark movie.
That's so vague. We were looking for Green Mile, Nightmare Before Christmas, Lion, or I'll take Whiplash. Also Shawshank.
Are those yours?
Jonathan wins. Yeah, basically. Latest piece of content that you consumed, Jonathan? Book, TV show, podcast?
You know, I don't do an fiction reading, but I did read a book about something back in the 50s, which was the precursor to AI and data called If Then, the Simulmatics Corporation, which is one of those little known facts that there was a company back then that used data to try and influence elections and do things for good and bad. So I read that. It's a very interesting book. I'd highly recommend it.
Very nice. Susie?
The last thing I consumed was a Bloomberg podcast this morning.
Oh, very nice. All right, folks. There are two guests. There they are. Let's move, of course, to today's fact before we get into the episode. Today's fact, a baby elephant can stand. How long do you think it takes a baby elephant to stand after they're born?
Oh, so cute. I think 3 days.
It's adorable. Okay.
I'll say 10 minutes.
Oh, I didn't even anchor you.
Jonathan, are you kidding me? Do you know this?
I don't. I have no clue.
20 minutes.
Oh, I was so close.
How would you?
He's a data guy. That's how he knows.
Oh, 20 Look, minutes after birth.
You know what? I mean, the little elephants are so, you know, there's not a lot of, they're small. They can easily stand up. I just felt it. I felt that they would be able to stand up right away.
Susie, if you're lucky this isn't a game, you'll be destroyed. So you said 3 days. By 2 days, they can keep up with the herd. I couldn't walk till I was like 7. Dragging myself around the living room. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Let's well played, Jonathan. That was closer than I thought anyone was going to get. Today's real topic, the future of marketing and real-time insights. All right, folks, today in The Leads, we're going to talk all about data and how it helps us in our lives and our jobs. And then in the second half of the show, we'll discuss cookies going away soon and how to read the economy's mixed signals. But we start, of course, with The Lead. We're talking all about data. And we wanted to start with a new product just hit the market, CNBC NRF Retail Monitor. That's just launched. And Jonathan, it's powered by you guys. So this Retail Monitor uses actual real-time debit and credit card purchase data to provide more accurate and timely insights into retail sales activity. Jonathan, tell me a little bit more about what this is really capable of.
Yeah, so there's a strong belief that we have at Affinity. We call ourselves a leading consumer purchase insights company, but a strong belief that marketers, retailers, they need to have visibility on what their customers are doing, what their prospective customers are doing outside their own stores and websites. And we found ourselves over many years building relationships with thousands of banks that send us their credit and debit card purchases every month. We run loyalty programs for those banks. We invented a new kind of loyalty program years ago where the retailers fund the rewards programs. The banks had to give us all the data to run those programs. And then over time, we got the rights to use that data. And so we're starting with the view that marketers must have that kind of outside in view. You know, a restaurant chain needs to have visibility in their share of stomach across their competitors, adjacent categories like grocery. We launched recently what you referenced, the CNBC National Retail Federation Retail Monitor. We started a relationship with the NRF last year. They looked at our data. They saw how well it correlated with the primary source of data on the economy is from the Census Bureau, part of the Department of Commerce. Every month for decades, they produced what they call the monthly retail trade survey, which is basically a survey of 13,000 businesses. And that's the primary input to the GDP on the economy. And they were like, wait a minute, Affinity Solutions has 140 million cards where we get every single day, we get all their transactions. Why wouldn't we use actual transaction data? So we started a journey with them last year. They tested our data, compared it to 10Ks, 10Qs, the census data, and saw how well correlated it was, but that we can get it every week. Ultimately, we can get it every day with a three-day lag, and that they could use that data and slice and dice it in a lot of different ways. So it's really about modern retail providing a much better dynamic source of insights versus the more static sources of data that they had previously. And then we took it to CNBC, the NRF and Affinity, because they too were looking for more modern ways to report on the economy. And we formed a partnership. We were on television a couple of weeks ago announcing that partnership, and we're super excited about it. It's a view into the economy in a way that hadn't been available before.
Marcuson is an ex-retail practitioner. This is the crystal ball almost. And so I have a question to ask you, Jonathan, if you don't mind. Do you have SKU level data, or it's just the entire basket that you're getting to see?
So it's a great question. We don't have SKU level data that is on our roadmap, but we do see the full basket. And so the kinds of marketers that we tend to focus on, all categories of retail, travel, hospitality, restaurant, QSR, telecom, streaming. But interestingly, you know, we had a relationship with a large quick service fast food restaurant that was losing share of stomach. Our data was showing they thought it was going to be to a burger chain, another competitor to them. Turns out it was to a chicken retail that focused on chicken. And so there was a significant amount of loss of share from the burger chain to this chicken chain. But the reason I mention it is that even this was used, that insight was used so that the burger chain introduced their own chicken sandwich. There was the chicken sandwich wars, if you guys remember, recall a few years ago. But they were also able to use that insight, you know, to invest in marketing and media that was able to target people who ate at that chicken chain to try and win that share back. And so even though we don't have SKU level data, here we were able to infer from our data what product that people were leaving our client for to this competitor and determined what it was that influenced their merchandising decisions to introduce that product. But then they also were able to use our data connected with media data so they could pick TV shows, media properties that had a high presence of buyers and level of spend for that competitor to win them back. They could change their creative to highlight menu options that would appeal to people that went to that competitive fast food restaurant. So we don't have SKU level data, but we have lots of ways of using our current data to solve big problems.
And it sounds like you do a lot of myth busting, right? I think that's the other thing. All the merchants, no matter what category you're in, you think who you know who your competitor is. So it's very cool that you were able to say to them, actually, it's not another burger chain, it's chicken. And now you got to figure that out.
Exactly. And then, you know, it goes deeper because then, you know, we want to be able to slice and dice it by income and age. And, you know, the ultimate, you know, use of this data is to create personalized experiences, consumer experiences and marketing campaigns. And so the more I can understand that, you know, the differences in what people are buying, but slice and dice it by age and income and location. I mean, the real vision is, you know, the old story of the Monday morning meeting at the retailer headquarters where they analyze the results of the prior week and make merchandising and marketing decisions. This dynamic data set, we believe, is important for retailers and other consumer-facing marketers to have, not just at the headquarters level and not just at the city level, but down to the individual store, the trade area around a store. Imagine the store manager every Monday, you know, getting this report that shows where their customers are shopping, at what competitors and other categories, broken down by age and income. Extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you mentioned this dynamic data. I mean, tens of millions of cards, billions of transactions, credit and debit transactions that you guys anonymize. We're looking at $500 billion in U.S. sales when it's all told. So it's a big chunk in terms of getting a read on what's going on. I liked that you were starting in an article I was reading talking about this concept of data as a roadmap, not as a resource, which I thought was really nice and forward-looking. So you've had this product. When did this get off the ground?
So on the 13th of November, we announced it.
Okay.
And that was when we launched it to the world.
And so what is this product? Was it told you about consumer spending and what kind of what happened during the Thanksgiving holiday period?
Yeah, so we were really pleased. October, you know, we tend to look at year over year. October versus October was about 2.4%. Not bad. But what we were excited about is November as a whole was up 4.2%, November of 23 versus November of 22. But when we unpack that and look at the Black Friday weekend, and Black Friday typically used to be that was the day. People would line up at stores and look for doorbusters. Now it tends to be not just Black Friday, it's the day after, or Cyber Monday, the Monday after Black Friday, but it's the Tuesday right after Cyber Monday. When we look at Thanksgiving week alone, that was 5.5% leap. We look at actually that Black Friday to Cyber Monday. So we were really excited about that. November sales up 4.3%, but Thanksgiving week up 5.5%. So very interesting, and particularly seeing the spend, not just on that one day, but the days, you know, immediate days following.
And Jonathan, you guys are able to see online and in store, right?
That's right.
It's so cool. I don't know that we talked about it enough. The value of understanding what's happening outside of your own data set is gigantic. And then to be able to follow where your customer is going to say like, oh, well, they could have bought this with me, but they bought it somewhere else. What am I doing wrong so that they didn't buy it from me and they bought it? I know, Marcus, we just talked about, is that what made you smile? We just talked about
No. You're making a great point is what I was laughing, but also air quotes are always funny.
Because it's not wrong. It's like, you know, if air quotes on a podcast, very, very helpful. Yeah, yeah. Sorry about
nice
that.
Nice job, Susan.
But,
what's the audio equivalent of air quotes are, but I don't know. Yeah.
Emphasis, I think.
Oh,
emphasis.
I would like to emphasize.
Susie's Christmas tree looks really good.
Oh, come on. It's amazing, my Christmas tree. But it's all okay. Joking aside, I think we may have bypassed just how important it is to not only understand what's happening outside of your doors or website, but also to see where your customer is going. Because there are retailers that are leaving a lot of money on the table when they're only looking at how they're performing against themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there were some, you know, other examples besides the fast food. I mean, one very large supermarket chain that we work with one of our consulting partners, we work with most of the major consulting firms, and I can say who they are, Deloitte, Accenture, Bain, McKinsey. We talk about them. We don't talk about the end client. But we were working with one very large grocery chain, and they were like, yeah, we know who our competitors are. We know exactly what they're doing. And they thought about that as other grocery chains. It turns out they too were very surprised when they found out they were losing a lot of share to fast food restaurants. People were going in, picking up food to go. Now they're, you know, buying other stuff while they're in there. Now it turns out they're going to other QSRs, to superstores like Target and others. So, you know, it's opening up their eyes. It's removing the blinders.
Yeah.
I'll give you one other example that's come up pretty consistently is most retailers assume, you know, there's an 80-20 rule, or in some industries, a 90-10 rule, where the top 10 or 20% of their customers make up 80 to 90% of their sales, depending on the category and the retailer. And so the assumption is, well, we must have all of their share. If they're making up such a big portion of our total spend in their stores, that they must have 100% of their share. And almost always, when we unpack it and look even at that top 10 to 20%, it turns out that there's a lot more share that they don't have. We had an auto parts company that I presented at a conference, and the top 5% of their customers that represented 50% of their sales, they still had 35 to 40% share of wallet that they were spending at competitors. Pretty unbelievable.
Truly makes me so excited. There is nothing more important than a retailer understanding where else their customers are shopping, and they pull the wool over their eyes, and you're going to help uncover that. And I bet you guys can also see where those shoppers are spending other money, right? Like whether they're getting traveling, restaurants, entertainment, concert tickets, movies, because it's all kind of, you know, impulse purchases, there's necessity purchases, and then there's all this fun money that retailers are trying to catch.
That's right. And, you know, at the macro level, I was talking about the November increases. There were certain categories that really grew a lot. Health and personal care and sporting goods went up, I think, by 9% and 8% respectively. E-commerce retailers went up by 20%. When you start looking at the overall wallet of a consumer, you know, to your point, there's essentials and then there's discretionary. And what's really interesting in the last several years, more and more of the pie is discretionary. Consumers have money to spend. Obviously, the job market is robust, which is great. Wages have been going up. Inflation is more in check. And believe it or not, there's still money left over from the stimulus checks from the pandemic. And people in general, you know, are saving at a rate that, you know, is a little bit counterintuitive. So people have money to spend. And just one example of how we use that, can use it, is travel. We have one client we were able to show that wanted to target Globetrotters in the travel industry. And we were able to tap into our data, identify those who traveled internationally, and built a custom audience that they were able to use in their digital marketing to target people who were likely to have traveled internationally. Their acquisition costs for their new customers were slashed by up to sevenfold, I think. So it's the continued shift from sort of the wide net that we're casting to much more precision and making sure that every marketing dollar is spent on, you know, marketing and audiences that have proven interest and intent.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what's next for consumer purchase data, but I think you've summed it up beautifully. So that is where we will leave our lead story, and we'll move straight to second half of the show today. In other news, Google phasing out cookies by the end of 2024. And what should we make of the US economy's mixed signals? Story one, Catherine Perloff of Adweek writes that since Google's announced plans to nix cookies, there have been countless reports on how unprepared marketers are for the disappearance of the backbone of digital advertising. She notes that the inertia keeping performance advertisers from testing cookie alternatives is a powerful force, but it might be time to get moving since Google's VP of Global Ads, Dan Taylor, is confident nothing will change Google from phasing out cookies by the end of 2024. And Kaylee Barber of Digiday says that when 1% of cookies are deprecated from Chrome in January 2024, so next month, we will have a real-world testing environment as we try to understand what the absence of a third-party cookie signal will look like. Jonathan, what's your take on where third-party cookie deprecation stands?
Yeah, so we've been expecting this for a while. We see this as not the end of good targeting. We see it as a new beginning. And we believe that, you know, Affinity, which we basically have the equivalent or a proxy of first-party data for almost every retailer and restaurant and travel and telecom firm in the United States and the UK, by the way, that there'll be a few key providers of permission first-party data sets, and there'll be a few left standing. We believe ours will be critical. We see this as a new opportunity.
Susie?
So I think we all know it's going to happen. Nobody's really ready for it to happen. And it's going to be a balancing act between how do you make a consumer's life easier by serving them the ads they need to get when they're ready to make the purchase wherever they are in their customer shopping journey, but also safeguarding that data.
Mm-hmm. Story two. In October, the Wall Street Journal wrote that the US economy grew a strong 5% in Q3. That's double Q2 and its fastest pace since 2021, noting that it was driven by a consumer spree that may not last. That was back in October. Fast forward to today, and the journal noted that it seems like it has lasted as consumer confidence jumped, according to the University of Michigan's index. But will this optimism last? Glass half full says that that jump in consumer confidence reverses four previous months of declines. Unemployment has been below 4% for 2 years, and inflation is way down from last year's 9%. Glass half empty says consumer confidence hasn't come anywhere close to pre-pandemic levels, at least according to, well, actually, according to Michigan and also University of Michigan and also the Consumer Conference Board. So there's consumer confidence not coming close to pre-pandemic levels. There's incomes are falling over the summer, and there's interest rates still hurting folks. So Jonathan, what do you make of all of these mixed signals?
Well, one thing we've observed throughout the pandemic, and you know, yes, the consumer confidence is up in November, but we see for the first time from the pandemic changed is the correlation between consumer confidence and consumer spend behavior. It used to run in parallel. Now it seems like they're running counter. Consumer confidence is low. In some cases, they're feeling not very good, but they still go out and spend a lot. So it's a bit of a head scratcher. We have to be careful we don't look at consumer confidence too much as the true bellwether of how people are actually behaving.
Mm-hmm. Susie, what do you think?
I mean, I couldn't agree more. Consumer confidence is definitely not the end all be all. And it's this year has been so volatile. I think going into next year with an election, it's going to be even more bizarre and unexpected. There are lots of different metrics, and sometimes they seem to run against each other. But at the end of the day, if wage growth is not outpacing inflation, if we're not in full employment or everybody who wants to have a full-time job doesn't have one, that's a problem. And if the saving rate gets less and less, it's going to be a problem for consumer spending next year.
Indeed. And that is all we have time for, folks. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Jonathan.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you to Susie.
Thanks for having me.
Indeed. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team, and Sophie, who does our social media. Thanks to everyone for listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Affinity Solutions. You can hang out with Sarah Lebo, host of Reimagining Retail, tomorrow for the last show of the year for Reimagining Retail, where she'll be giving out some retailer awards with Susie and others.